Hi, everyone. I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at SmartEye. Welcome to the Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we feature thought leaders doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little about us, SmartEye is the global leader in human insight AI, technology that understands, supports, and predicts human behavior in complex environments, bridging the gap between humans and machines for a safe and sustainable future. Teva, now a SmartEye company, has been a pioneering force in emotion AI for the last decade. Used by 26% of the Fortune Global 500 companies, 90% of the world's largest advertisers, and over 1,300 research organizations around the world, Affectiva truly stands at the forefront of decoding human emotions through technology, offering marketers and creatives an unparalleled understanding of audience engagement and feelings, shaping the future of compelling storytelling and impactful content generation. Generative AI has changed the world of advertising. Large language models create draft copy instantly. Image generators produce visuals in minutes. Text-to-video tools will make creative development even more streamlined. But what about the risks from this all AI-led efficiency? Can generative AI really design compelling ads? Emotional engagement is critical for advertising success. Will the rush to automate the creative process strip advertising of its emotional power? Today, we are featuring our own Sasha Mekanova, Account and Business Development Director at Affectiva. With 15 years' experience in advertising effectiveness research, Sasha is an advertising nerd and a neuroscience enthusiast. Her mission is to humanize technology with emotion AI. She is joined by Graham Page, Affectiva's Global Managing Director of Media Analytics, for a moderated discussion with Mike Stevens, the founder of Insight Platforms. This episode shares how emotion AI can work with generative AI to ensure that ads drive long-term brand equity, audience engagement, and even virality. Let's listen in to learn more.
Oh, hello, everyone. Thank you for joining the session today, and thanks to Mike and his team for organizing this. Today, I'm going to speak about generative AI use in advertising, and how Affectiva emotion AI technology can help navigating creative development process while using it. But first, a few words about why emotional engagement is so critical for advertising success. When looking at the stages of advertising effectiveness, you can see that not only emotions are important in driving and sustaining both attention and engagement, pretty much helping an ad to stand out, but it also helps creating long-lasting memories about your brand, which are so important as we don't buy brands immediately after we see an ad. And finally, it can help positively frame the later brand decision-making at the point of purchase. And from the validation work Affectiva have done with its partners, we also know that ads that evoke stronger emotions also generate stronger brand impact and ultimately drive sales. So a little over a year ago, we all witnessed and continue to see the accelerated development of generative AI and its rapid adoption. It is evident the technology has created significant interest and reshaped the way many industries work. In fact, marketing and advertising world has been at the forefront of the tech adoption. And so far, it has already been used for developing ideas, imagery, and videos that companies can use for their advertising campaigns. And with more applications being released, the potential of generative AI appears endless. So we know that the use of it can make the creative development process more efficient. And we also know that emotional engagement is a critical component for advertising success. So the question really is, can AI create a truly emotionally engaging story? And in order to answer this question, our team decided to test a few ads that involve generative AI in its creation. Into the details of the study, I would like to recap on what emotion AI is and how it helps the researchers and brands. Emotion AI helps us understand pre-conscious emotional responses to brand content and beyond. This is a technology which can be built in the part of your ad effectiveness research tool, and it works the way that before the participant watch your ad within a survey, they get asked to review the consent form and opt into recording. And if they did so, then whilst watching the video content, their facial expression data will be collected. Once all participants complete the survey, the facial expression data gets aggregated and analyzed across all the participants. Our system allows to code for over 40 different metrics, including individual facial expressions and aggregated summary metrics. And you get the metrics most relevant to the content via interactive dashboard that derives your insights for the analysis. The tested ads represent different types of generative AI implementation, ranging from fully GenAI created ads, such as pepperoni hug and orange juice ads, those that use generative AI as a creative development tool or a creative element, such as ads for Mint Mobile and Visit Denmark, and a more traditional advertisement created by human teams. And to raise the bar even higher, as a traditional ad, we chose an ad for Switzerland tourism, involving not one, but two celebrities, executed with powerful storytelling and humor, so you can sense the budget involved. By testing these ads, we will further explore whether the content that uses generative AI can be as compelling, emotionally engaging, and likable by the consumers. So what we've learned is that AI can be emotionally engaging. On this chart, we are looking at the scores for overall engagement in pink, valence, net positivity in light pink, and smiles in purple. So indeed, the ads created with the use of AI, such as pepperoni hug, orange juice, and Visit Denmark, show equally strong emotional response and positive engagement as a more traditional ad, such as My Switzerland. But are all the smiles equal? So before deep diving into the results of different ads, let's watch some of them. So first, the fully AI-generated ad for orange juice. Just to clarify, it is user-generated content, not for a specific brand, but rather an experiment of generative AI capabilities.
Take a sip of our freshly squeezed orange juice and let the juicy, sweet liquid run down your throat. The right way to start your day. Perfect for a quick beverage or a family reunion. Your mother definitely won't think you're an embarrassment anymore. Each orange is hand-squeezed by myself personally. Yummy! Orange juice. Make breakfast great again.
So here we are looking at the moment-by-moment smiles of the audience while they were watching this ad. So the overall smiles are in green. We also split the data by a survey question of whether they realized it's an AI ad. So the blue line shows those who did, and the yellow line, those who did not. Therefore, this graph suggests that people are reacting more to the fact that it's an AI-generated ad rather than the actual narrative of the content. Viewers who did not realize that it's an AI-scripted ad are a lot less positively engaged. They're only reacting slightly to a hand-squeeze joke at the end. Hence, this type of engagement has a lower potential to positively impact a brand. Our next ad has been created with the use of AI to generate the script and animate the characters, while the creative idea itself came from the creative agency team based on the consumer insight. You may have seen this ad before online or if you attended our Demo Days presentation last year. But let's watch it again to recap.
Ah, hello there, dear tourists. While I appreciate the attention, let's be honest. Standing in line for hours just to see me is not exactly the most exciting way to spend your holiday.
Trust me, I've been hanging here for centuries and I've seen it all.
The pushing, the shoving, it's not pretty.
As Vincent van Gogh, I might say, don't just go to see my paintings, go to Denmark.
There, you can skip the crowds and enjoy the simple pleasures of life.
Like biking through charming towns.
Exploring picturesque coastlines.
And let's not forget about Denmark's legendary food scene.
Wow!
That's the true joy of travel.
The unexpected surprises and adventures that come from stepping off the beaten path.
That being said, I do hope to see you back soon. I do get lonely in this museum, you know.
So here we are looking at the similar graph of the smiles split by the awareness of AI use in this ad. So in this Visit Denmark ad, the positive engagement is not just coming from amusement about AI animated talking paintings. Instead, people are reacting to the AI written jokes. Yeah, some being rather cheesy, but yet funny for the audience. And although only half of the participants realized that it was scripted by AI, we see the same levels of positive engagement regardless. And you see how different it is to the previous examples we've seen for orange juice ad. So that suggests that when used as a creative enhancement tool, AI can create emotionally engaging stories that help bringing the narrative alive. And our last example is another fully AI-generated ad called Pepperoni Hug. Again, a user-generated content, so let's watch the ad.
Are you ready for best pizza of life? Bring friends down to Pepperoni Hug Spot. Our chefs make pizza with heart and special touch. Cheese, pepperoni, vegetable, and more secret things. Need delivery? Pizzas come fast. Knock, knock, who's there? Pizza magic. Eat Pepperoni Hug Spot pizza. Your tummy say thank you. Your mouth say, mmm. Pepperoni Hug Spot. It's like family, but with more cheese.
So now that you've seen the ad, please reflect on your reaction to this ad before we get into the results. Anything strange you felt? You probably did, because another lesson we learned is that uncanny valley effect can impact emotional positivity. Academically, the uncanny valley theory, defined as a concept of humanoid objects that imperfectly resemble human beings, provoke uncanny feelings of uneasiness and repulsion. In simple words, it looks creepy and it makes us cringe. In Orange Juice and Pepperoni Hug, our emotion AI detects strong negative cognitive reactions from the audience. These moments of negativity occur the most when the AI-generated human faces showing emotional expressions and animation appears on the screen. While you may think that it is laughable, your face also shows signs of repulsion, translating into negative feelings. So in its current stage of development, generative AI is capable of creating visuals of humans. Yet, it is still struggling with creating realistic animations and compelling emotional expressions. So therefore, not all emotional engagement translates into conscious likability. And here we are comparing overall emotional engagement derived from facial expressions with the stated likability asked as a survey question. So while fully AI-generated ads create strong level of emotional reactions, the audience doesn't find it highly likable when reflecting on it, and we have seen why. So therefore, these types of ads have less potential to create the desired impact for a brand. However, when artfully done by mixing use of AI tools, creative idea, and human inputs, it can be as strong as a traditional high-budget ad. So now let's recap on the key takeaways for the researchers and advertisers. AI-generated content can be emotionally engaging. It can be successfully used as a creative element to drive engagement. However, to keep its relevance, it's important that it is connected with the brand and the message. Using generative AI just for the sake of it may not pay off in the long run. It can assist in the creative process. However, consumer-centric creative idea and creative team input into the execution are key to produce standout content. Generative AI is progressing at speed, and it's absolutely mind-blowing how more advanced it is now compared to just a few months ago. Yet, there is still a watch out for generative AI-created human characters, as it can potentially affect your brand because of subconscious negative reactions to such characters. And last but definitely not least, the use of emotion AI to understand ads performance can bring valuable insights to advise your creative and media strategy and greatly improve its ROI. And that is why our technology is used by over 90% of the world's top advertisers. Affectiva brings emotion AI technology into your creative effectiveness research tools as we collaborate with your research partners to generate the insights that your business require.
Thanks, Sasha. I think some great examples of AI-generated content on the ads there. I love that. The uncanny valley, you can see how people would react to the pizza hug with some of those kind of distortions, and you've got people, it looks like they're chewing the plate in some places. It's quite striking. But I hadn't actually seen the orange juice ad voiced by Donald Trump. What struck me was how the kind of rising engagement chart actually almost a perfect inversion of the stock price fall of the Trump media organization over the last few days. You know, it's uncanny how these things kind of play out, but
there is something there.
Yeah, we're all living in a simulation, so great. Well, thank you very much for those insights. And I say we've got a question from Graham already. I think, you know, really important, actually a good one to kick off with, because he's asking about ownership of the content. So if you've used generative AI as part of the creative process, where does the intellectual property sit? Who actually owns the output? Is that a challenge you're finding with the advertisers you're working with?
I actually don't believe this question been answered so far, because I think this is a very, very tricky one. And I understand that this is the challenge not only in this specific area, but in most of the industries where you actually generate content, be it entertainment. I mean, you are very aware of what happened with all the generative AI in Hollywood last year and actually driving many conversations about, yeah. Again, this is the tricky line, and I know that many companies actually trying to contribute, because a lot of new laws and legislations now have to be in place. I must admit, I was quickly Googling behind during the session, trying to is this question answered? But I also figured that different countries and geographies legislations may rule different, which makes it even more complicated. So I wouldn't say that from our own experience that clients so far been kind of questioning this. I must say that there are not that many yet who are actively using and figured it out. I think a lot of the companies still trying to, you know, experiment and see what kind of value they can get from this, but quite cautiously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And right. Just to build on that, I'm sure this is one of those things that will kind of get worked out as the commercial models for these kind of things, you know, become more grounded. You know, I'm absolutely certain that many of the big agency groups will kind of be using these technologies in a variety of ways, you know, perhaps not literally just to kind of let them run wild, as Sasha's presentation shows. I think that's probably a bad idea, but certainly there's all sorts of roles that they can play. And I'm certain that those large organizations won't be allowing a situation to emerge where they're not in control of the content that they're being paid to create. So now, that said, on an informal basis, I really don't know the answer to that question, and I suspect that's possibly a bigger challenge to those folk who might be kind of using this technology in a slightly more informal way.
I think I did see that Adobe had agreed to indemnify any of the creators who use their tools to say, you know, if there's any comeback from a copyright perspective, they'll their users. But I think there's a lot of new lawsuits kind of gathering steam at the moment, so mm-hmm. it is something. Looks like it's going to be shaping out over the next little while. Yeah. Holly's got a question. This is a really interesting one. You know, would it be possible to mix the emotion AI, you know, detection in with kind of live qualitative research? So if you've got participants, you know, responding either through, I guess, you know, videos or focus groups or in person, could you use any of this to kind of gauge emotional response live and on the fly?
Well, effectively, yeah, this is what we do. Not on the fly, not live just now. We are working with certain providers of the qualitative insights who are going to have exactly this capability to understand the reaction to the content being tested. So not only what people say about it, but also what's their intuitive subconscious reaction straight away. It's hopefully going to be launched very soon. And yes, stay tuned for this. But yeah, currently what we do, the functionality is available. It's just at the post-processing. So you first collect all your data and then you get the insights.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. I notice the metrics that you used as the sort of the key indicators. I think it sort of smiles, engagement, is it positivity or whatever? Yep.
Valence,
yeah. And this is, you know, I know there's been a lot of sort of questioning and challenges around the sort of the legacy Ekman model of facial coding, particularly the kind of the Lisa Feldman Barrett stuff and how emotions are made. Is this so? But you have mapped those kind of metrics against commercial outcomes, haven't you? You know, to be able to say this actually corresponds to sales uplift or to memory and so on. Is that correct?
Fair to take that one, Sasha. So, I mean, I think you're absolutely right that there's a degree of contextual impact on kind of people's reactions and the reactions they show on their face. But there are also absolutely generalities that you can draw. So yeah, in general, you know, as you suggested, we've seen evidence that, you know, showing strong expressions and particularly showing what are typically positive expressions, you know, are absolutely associated with positive sales outcomes for advertisers. So we've done validation work that we published on that with Mars at SMR and also along with Kantar and others. So that, you know, there's clear evidence that, you know, what you show on your face when you watch an ad can have a behavioral meaning and lead you to make some broad conclusions about likely effectiveness. But that said, I think there's also another point, which is that, you know, clearly you can't simply so interpret facial expressions in isolation. The good news is, you know, and I think these are really good cases in point, you know what people are reacting to. So in the case of some of the AI generating ads, you know, people may be smiling and laughing in response to them, but that's not necessarily a good thing, right? And you know that's not a good thing because you've seen what they're reacting to. So, you know, I can see a situation where, you know, a completely dumb system that somebody's not got a user or an analyst involved in might begin to get into some interesting territory. But so long as I think you have a human and analyst in the loop, you can get some really useful data out of this whilst also, you know, applying some common sense.
Yeah. Okay. That's great. Murat's asking a great question about emotion AI for analyzing voice-based reactions. I guess, you know, sort of what is it, tone of voice or stress or whatever that is. Now, your is it sister company or you're part of the same group now with iMotions? Is that right? You would talk a little bit about the other types of metrics that can be used alongside your type of emotion AI.
Graham, yes. So from our side, historically, our tech being used a lot for the content reaction where people not necessarily talk a lot. So there's no voice there. That's why we're actually working with the completely muted videos, just the facial expressions to derive. Saying that, more and more it's being used in the qualitative research, which is the conversational type of videos. So our tech can detect that there is a speaking at that part, but our tech does not include the voice part of it. Now, as you rightly mentioned, our sister company, iMotions, they do have the module of the voice analytics to understand the reactions more, which you can also overlay with the with facial coding part, which is our technology and some other signals. So this is what they have in their tech. And indeed they can derive the probably less granular, more of a high level positivity, negativity mapping against the key emotions. But yeah.
And as Sasha was saying, that technology definitely exists, and iMotions are able to deploy it. There are some of the things that can be derived from the signal as well, and that's things that we're also looking into. So, for instance, we focus a lot on the face and what that says about emotional state, but there are other signals in respondent video that aren't even from the audio channel, but just in the images that can be collected around kind of levels of excitement and a neuroscientist might refer to as arousal. There are signals in there that you can also derive. So again, that's a space that we're exploring at the moment, again, with people like iMotions who have some interesting technology there, because yeah, if you can get into that dimension of excitement as well as the emotional state that you can get from the face, and you get into a really interesting territory where even if someone is perhaps, you know, not showing a clear facial expression, you can still pick up some clear signals that they're actually engaged and so on. So yeah, we're exploring that right now.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Keep the questions coming. We've got some great ones here. Eve is asking about how can you apply emotion AI to analyze ads where, you know, a viewer's not going to be smiling. So, you know, it may be a particularly kind of attention grabbing or daring or shocking or whatever those other components are. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Love this question. So while the cases we've shown in this specific demo, we're talking a lot about smile and some other metrics. In total, our tech has more than 40 classifiers, which we show. So yes, we can actually look at things like crying moments and being very tense. So we do have signals such as brow furrow and surprise and open mouth for shocking moments. We do have our own created classifier for sentimentality, which is absolutely great for if you think of any Christmas ad in the UK, a good Christmas ad in the UK, which makes you sentimental. But basically, yeah, and I think it's really a great question because while we might think that, yeah, smile is a great way to understand if the ad actually, you know, hits the really positive kind of feeling, but saying that it's not the only emotion people and advertisers can play with to actually land this point. And for many brands, probably some humorous, funny stories wouldn't really match the brand identity. So they explore other routes. So yes, we do have different signals which can actually be used for understanding this specific narrative. And as Graham already mentioned before, when you look at the data, you always look at this against your objective. We work a lot in entertainment, and imagine that we are testing a trailer for, I don't know, scary suspense movie. We aren't expecting people to smile. We actually want to see them very tense and focused and, you know, kind of being disturbed a bit, and there are perfect signals showing this as well. So yes, we do have enough metrics to actually pick up on these nuances.
Yeah. Okay, great. Hopefully that answered the question, Eve. Do keep your questions coming. I mean, I think this is a really fascinating area as we, you know, we're using AI in the generative side of things to help, you know, create visuals, to create language, to create humor, you know, the things that you've showed. And then we're using different mechanics of AI to be able to understand the human response, the emotion response. It's like how these two things fit together, I think, is going to be a really interesting area of development over the next few years. There's a lot of attention for the OpenAI text to video model, the Sora model, when it was announced a few weeks ago. I know it's in kind of limited release, but we're starting to see some things come out. Do you have a view on how these tools might be used in, you know, in the generation of ads, or how they might change things?
Yeah, sure. So just to clarify, the ads which were created with generative AI being created all like quite a few months ago, long ago, before Sora came in. And I figure that now it would have been better with the use of this new, the new AI model released. And as I mentioned, it evolves at speed. And I myself had a chat with a few friends who are into the creative development business. And they are saying like every month, every 2 months, the new releases, and they're picking up on the new tools at this speed. And it's quite important actually being on top of what's happening. What was really interesting, and it's connected with our learning from the study we've done, this uncanny valley effect, and basically how bad this tech was in actually animating humans' faces. So Sora released about 10 minutes video to demo their capability. So it's a video with the different types of the prompts and narrative and the types of videos it can create. And just out of curiosity, I actually watched the entire 10 minutes to see what do they do with faces now. And interestingly, they do a close-up of human faces quite good, but what they don't do, or at least that it was included in the demo, showing their emoting or kind of heavily animated. From what I've seen, they haven't figured it yet. Yeah. Maybe it's coming, but I think it's one of the very, very difficult thing to tackle. And that's why I believe that even with the current state of the development, with the new release, it still remains a potential watch out for anyone who would use it for this specific case.
Yeah. But go ahead.
You know, and I was just going to say, I think the Visit Denmark ad was a bit of an interesting example for me in the sense that it showed a very useful path forward for how these tools will, I think, get used more widely, which is, yeah, you, as Sasha was saying, you can't kind of just let them loose because you're not quite sure how they're going to go. So that kind of level of kind of human oversight, taking the AI generated approach as an idea and then using other AI tools to animate that was a really interesting approach, which I felt might be more of a model that for the scaled use of these things, because without that human element, it's going to be, I think, very tricky to spot some of these odd things. And certainly then without audience testing, I think it becomes really tricky because, you know, if you just kind of throw some of these things out, some of these technologies out there, they are going to they're going to show some novel behaviors that you don't expect, and you will get some audience reactions that you don't expect. So I think, you know, a constrained use of them is clearly going to be the way forward. It's just where people draw the line may vary a little bit from case to case.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? There's almost a kind of mirror, you know, when you first see a generative AI output for some of these things, your initial reaction is like, wow. And then when you start to see some of the detail, like some of the Sora videos, it's like, hang on, is that a fish walking on through water? You know, you're going to start to see. And I think that human oversight of, hang on, this isn't quite right, we need to adjust this, I think that's where a lot of the kind of the research applications on the other side as well, you know, it's oh, this is great, we can get AI to do all this stuff to synthesize outputs, but actually you're right, you know, the grounding, the contextual understanding on the research, I think is the kind of mirror image of that, where researchers who are anxious about their kind of, you know, being displaced by AI, I think, you know, we'll be finding their value afresh for sure.
No, exactly. And actually on that topic, I do think there's an interesting point in that, you know, we see some of these generative AI tools being kind of asked to almost be the participant and be the respondent. You know, tell me how an audience would react to this. Tell me how someone's going to respond to this idea or that idea. And, or, you know, tell me how good this ad is going to be. And I think that becomes very challenging because, you know, those models will actually be constrained by what they've seen. So if, you know, a new idea, a new concept for a brand or an ad will be inherently challenging for AI models to deal with. So I genuinely think we're a long way away from the point where, you know, we can kind of just abandon the participant and ask the AI to do the researcher's job, particularly when it comes to things like creativity and understanding people's reactions to creativity, because, you know, actually that could be quite different to what a model has seen before. And so, yeah, I think the research industry does still need to actually have participants and you know, but use the best tools they can to get as much information out about those reactions as possible.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? We had a demo, I guess, you know, one of your big partners with the Link AI for, you know, from Kantar, which is effectively a predictive model for, you know, for predicting kind of elements of advertising sort of success. But I got the distinct impression that it's very much kind of part of a process, not a substitute, you know, that it's very much about, okay, well, it helps to provide guidance at this stage, but it's not, it, you know, it's a long way from being anything you could think of as an alternative to getting human feedback.
Yeah. And I can totally see cases where you can, you know, if think about all the different iterations of a campaign that agencies have to produce now. No one's going to go test all of those things with a live audience. But would you test the core of the idea? Yeah, I think you would. But then maybe use some of these more automated tools to kind of, you know, help you optimize the variants of that you've got to create. I can totally see that being an option. So yeah, not to say that these things can't help. The way I often think it's useful to think about them is that they're often, if you like, kind of telling you if you've embodied good kind of general behaviors and good general practices. So we've seen a lot of work done looking at trying to predict people's visual attention on digital advertising. There's a lot of models out there that do that, and they can do a good job to a certain point. But really what they're doing is trying to say, well, have you followed good visual attention hygiene rules? You know, is the design reasonably good? Having to put too much stuff in here, you're going to confuse everybody. But what it won't do is tell you literally, okay, this is actually how the audience put that story together or put that, you know, or kind of put that information together. So, you know, I think they're good to help you kind of like embody good practice, but I still think they will struggle with particularly new stuff or the core of an idea.
Yeah. So I guess it's a little bit like a spell check, isn't it? You know, it stops you from sort of making the worst mistakes, but it's not necessarily going to lead you to a great creative idea. Yeah. Great. Ashley's asking about, you know, what do you see as the main challenges and opportunities for brands who want to come into their advertising, especially the large campaign? Sasha, do you have any views around that?
Well, I think this is what we talked about in the key implications from what we learned. And I think when it all just started, we've seen quite a few campaigns who just jumped on this wagon of, ooh, it's something cool, trendy, novel. Let's use it just to, you know, create something standing out. And I think at that point, it was probably an interesting tool to, you know, get interest because there was a general interest to this tech. But I think going forward, it can be used, but as I did mention, it needs to be used for the clear purpose of it. It needs to be. So, for example, Ashley is referring to Super Bowl ads and one of the ads during the break. I believe it was for the energy drink. They were using generative AI in their advertising to create some imagery of the sportsman, I don't recall exactly, but basically they connected the use of it to the fact that they don't use anything artificial in their recipe of their drink. So basically they connected it with the brand and key benefit, which almost justified the use of it. There was another brilliant campaign, I believe it was Orange from France, where they used this tech to land the message and basically showed their support of the women's football in France. And again, they connected cleverly the use of the tool with the point they're making. Great campaign. So I think more and more this type of use cases would be seen a lot more. But as Gray mentioned again, this is still a novelty. It's a creative tool which is probably less known compared to others where you already, you know, have a historical knowledge of what's the best practice of using it. And that's why you may end up with some unexpected reactions. So that's why it's really important to at least get at some stage of your creative development, get this feedback of your consumers. Yeah. And you, in more cases than you would learn something really useful and insightful to either giving you confidence that it is definitely the right one or clearly showing you that there is a big watch out that can be optimized, but yeah, you probably shouldn't go with it live with your campaign.
Okay, great. You mentioned you have sort of colleagues or friends who work in agencies or in creative development. Are they nervous? Is there a lot of anxiety about how these AI tools may kind of disrupt their work, or are they quietly confident that, you know, that the human creativity is going to ride this out?
Well, I don't know if it is a subgroup of those of my friends who are like bold and adventurous, but I would say no, they aren't. They are actually really excited because now a lot of them, for example, can be a freelancer, and now with the use of this tool, they actually can create some really, really great ads. And I mean, so far, most of them have been using it to create the static images, ads like a poster, print ads. Mm. But I think most of them are excited and they do compare it with a Photoshop. It's a tool. It actually makes your life easier. Now, instead of spending hours sketching, you can actually use minutes to create something. And from my experience working with the clients, I strongly believe that one of the greatest use case of this tool is actually creating some sort of storyboard animatic part of the for the ad, because we know your research gives you the most of value the earlier you are in your creative process, so you don't spend money on the shooting yet or at any high production involved in it. But I know that historically some clients simply couldn't afford to have this animatic stage of testing because of time, because of animatic isn't cheap as well. It's cheaper than shooting probably, but it ain't cheap. So, and the time it takes time for the creative agency to deliver. So now using this tool, actually leveraging this tool, that may help them create this, the stimuli, which can be good enough to convey your idea, your story, to show to your audience and actually get the first read of your, and on the insights of the ad performance. And yeah, and we already have seen this started picking up in what we are testing, which is great.
Yeah, great. And you can use the Emotion AI toolbox to get that measure that feedback at the animatic and storyboard
stage
as well. Can you? Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, listen, we've had some great questions, some really good perspectives from both of you. Thank you very much. I think we're just about done with the questions from today. Doesn't look like there's anything else coming in. Sasha, thanks very much for the presentation. Graham, for joining for the Q&A as well. If you have colleagues who want to watch this, the recording will be available right after this session wraps up. And then people can sign up to watch it on the original page, the event page on our site. So it'll be there to watch on demand as well. But thanks very much. I really enjoyed the session and I learned some good stuff, which is always good for me. And I hope that those of you in the audience did as well. Do please tell everyone you know if you enjoyed it. And hopefully we'll see you at some of our future events. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks.
Thanks.
I thought this discussion really shed light on the impact of generative AI and emotion AI in advertising and how they can improve ad success. My key takeaways from this presentation were really around how emotions in advertising impact consumer engagement, the influence of positive and negative emotions, and how emotion AI helps develop more engaging advertising, as well as how researchers, publishers, and brands can work with emotion AI. I thought there were some great practical tips and actionable takeaways covered for researchers and insights teams who want to use this technology in their advertising testing. Don't forget to check out the full video presentation linked in the show notes for more on Emotion AI for Advertising Research, Strategy, and Planning. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the Human-Centric AI podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes. We are also on social media, so please reach out to us on X, formerly Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram to share any feedback you have on the show and weigh in on the discussion using hashtag Human-Centric AI Podcast. Don't forget to rate us and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.